Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
September 26th, 2024. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls. And this is the end of September edition. I mean, I can't believe September's over. It's October. Spirit Halloween decorations are going up on every, like, you know, Oakland A's stadium now has Spirit Halloween decorations all over it.
Yes.
I kept saying for months and months and months that summer's almost over. Now that it is, it's hard to believe that autumn's upon us and all these terrible changes are going to rain down on us like core updates, just like winter, you know, like winter. Before we go any further, happy birthday to Danny Sullivan. It's his 59th birthday on the day of this recording. So Danny, you made it. You almost made it to 60. Well done, mate.
Yay, happy birthday.
We're going to be talking a lot about WordPress and a lot about stuff that's going on at WordPress. Before we do, there's a couple quick things we want to get through. Google Cache is dead as a doornail. Dead. So dead that you'll never see it again. You could go look for it at Google Cache, except Google Cache ain't there.
It's all gone. And you know, the sad thing, though, is they say go to Internet Archive, but that doesn't help why I used it. I used it for things like, this site might be hacked. Let me go check the cache. Can't do that anymore. When did Google last crawl this publicly? Nope, can't do that anymore. So I am very sad to see it go. I had a lot of uses for it. And so did people outside the SEO industry.
The cache version of the site that you looked at Google was the version Google was seeing. There was so many hints you could get from Google Cache. Like you said, when did Google last take a look at this thing? That's such important information. And you can get that from Search Console, but I don't think it's as reliable as that is what we got from cache. And you got so much by that right click.
They're pointing us to the Internet Archives too, which is just, it may or may not even have the page. So, by the way, you can use Screaming Frog to commit a site you're crawling to the archive, and right now with no cache anymore, that might be a really good idea.
Yeah,
so you have a point where you can go back and look at the entire site.
Now that's it. I mean, like, I'm not sure what you would use that for, except for version control and maybe saving, getting to data that you probably should have saved in the first place. Like, if there's one thing I need, so one of the managers I work with 2 days ago comes to me and he's like, do you have that like massive document that you wrote 2.5 years ago? And I'm like, well, gee, I don't know, do I? And as it turns out, I didn't. I had to recreate this massive document like on the fly yesterday. Store everything. I've been doing this for 30 some odd years. Store everything on and store it again.
I keep every database for every audit I've ever run in the cloud. Because I've had someone come back to me 5 years later and say, do you still have that crawl you did? Like, yes, I do.
Yep.
Because I am like that.
So Google's cache is dead. You're not going to be getting data from it anymore. I'm very sorry to see that go. Internet Archive does not make up for it in any way.
No, not in any way. It doesn't perform the same function at all.
Although, if you're lucky, Internet Archive will save your ass the way Google Cache has also saved many a person's ass. Yeah.
So when you do Screaming Frog crawls, click the little button that says commit to the archive. It's talking about the Internet Archive, and it will commit the website to the Internet Archive. Okay. It's a nice little feature to have. So
many people in the search community, you know, experts, well-known personalities, whomever you, whatever you want to call the SEO, here's what is where it's at crew. We write the same thing or say the same things over and over and over again, and we've often done this for years, and it sometimes reminds me of just Absurdium, how conventional wisdom is turned on its head, or sometimes it's completely ignored by Google, whom we're often quoting as the source of the conventional wisdom. So in the last year, innumerable thousands of webmasters who put in the hard work to create personal expertise sites across wide swath of topics. Travel, leisure activities, cooking, do-it-yourself home improvement sites, just wide swaths of information. Some of these were some of these turned from personal hobby sites into actual businesses, where they hired writers and SEOs and people to work on and improve the website. They would actually hire, home improvement persons to conduct and document projects that brought traffic to their website, sold advertising, etc. The great chain of success on the web until a series of updates, starting with the helpful content updates of September 2023. And, again, thousands of those people got wiped out. But all along, conventional wisdom said there is hope. There's going to be hope. Don't worry about it. Google understands that Google's taking feedback. And they want to hear what you're saying, and they're going to adjust their algorithms to honor the work that you've done, and provide people with the best possible information, which you've gone out of your way to do. We write the same things over and over and over again. One thing I keep thinking is a quote from Franz Kafka. Oh, there is hope. There's an infinite amount of hope, just not for us. With Google, there's an infinite amount of hope. There's always renewal at Google, but sometimes it feels it's just not hope for this beleaguered group of webmasters because they saw gains. And Christine, you reported on it. You saw this with some of your, and then those gains were gone, just wiped out in the post update updates.
Now mine did not, I did not lose any from the update. Mine are fine, but I do see on Twitter people talking about how theirs are not. So, which is very unfortunate given what's happened with Google and just annihilating these sites. So, some people did say though, in Twitter that they lost it and it came back. So, and they're still seeing a lot of volatility. So hopefully people's will come back. But if not, the last one was a core update. It is recoverable, but you just have to maybe see why they took it away. As maybe, I don't, we don't know why. They don't ever tell us why it gets rolled out and then taken away again.
This is almost breaking my heart to tell people there is hope, because there is hope. There is. There actually is.
Yeah, well,
If
yeah.
something breaks, you can fix it. It's Google. It's a machine. But are we doing people a disservice at this point?
No, because I'd recovered five sites from the core updating. The HD is a different thing. We don't know why people are not recovering from that, except I'm really convinced that it's machine learning at this point. But when it comes to core updates, they still seem to be acting like they've always acted, which is, it's core ranking signals, usually technical. The people that had markdowns that I worked with, they all got their traffic back. So it is, there is hope if it's a core update. The other thing is, make sure you know which update it is. I had 10 companies come to me and tell me they had HDU issues, and not a single one of them did. All of them had core update issues. So the HDU, we don't necessarily know how to recover from because I think machine learning is broken. But the core update is recoverable. It's not acting any different from what I can see because the site's recovered in the way that I always recover them. So if there was something majorly different about it, at least one or two might not have recovered. For the advice I gave to people, who were hurting and couldn't afford somebody, so I gave them advice. They've recovered theirs as well. So why some didn't, lost it again, wait, maybe it'll come back too. Because Google may be experimenting with something else. So it may not be not related to core update. They may have gotten core update traffic because I have a client that got core update and then they are down, but we reviewed it yesterday and they're down from a whole bunch of technical issues. Just plain technical, not core update technical. Like, they suddenly have 150,000 new and no index pages. So you can't assume just because it happened right after the core update that it's related to the core update, right? You have to do a deep dive. You have to see. So, but for the people with the HCU, we do know almost nobody recovered, if anybody, because I have a feeling some of the people who think they recovered were also CU core updates, not HCUs. So,
Is there
yeah.
a way for okay, so one of the for listeners who aren't aware, one of the problems webmasters might have in diagnosing their own problem their issues is these updates hit simultaneously, and they not just once but twice. In August 2023, there was a core update. September 2023, there's a helpful content update. In March 2024, there's a core update of which a helpful content update was thought to be packaged in or running alongside. So changes are happening to webs. It's not like you can like look at an update calendar and say, well, it's this date because something happened and shifted then. Around that time, because sometimes the helpful content and core update were running concurrently with each other or running alongside each other. So, is there a way, Christine, that a webmaster can look at the effect that updates have had on their site, and maybe they're not entirely accurate, but when they're trying to instruct their SEO, they're it's best to set them on a clearer path. Is there a way that someone can tell that this was a core update that hit them or a helpful content update that hit them?
One, you probably need someone like me or an experienced SEO to take a look because it's really easy to mistake them. Like I said, 10 people came to me assured that they were dead in the water with an HCU, and none of them were. They're all CUs. But they're applied differently. So the HCU is applied across the board on all your pages, right? Until it supposedly moved into this core update, but at the page level, but we don't even know because there were comments made by Google. I forget which person. Basically, like it's totally different now. So it's not even the HCU anymore. So the core update acted like it normally would, so I wouldn't assume anything negative about the core update. But the original HCU is applied to every page on your website. So if you go to your queries or your pages in GSC and you see every one of them lost ranking or traffic, then you know that was an HCU. Core updates are generally for your money or your life type sites, and they happen at the keyword level because Google doesn't know if your site is your money or your life. It only knows if a keyword is or a query is. So if you go to your queries, generally there's a group of queries, a group of roots. So it may be like baseball. I'm bad baseball. I don't know enough about baseball to do that. Coffee and creamer, coffee and cups, coffee and you'll see that there's one or two key terms that were down. All the pages related to them are down. And then go look at those site and see where those are located and check those for all the potential issues in ranking, but mostly technical issues. Unless your content's just not good or your site architecture is really bad. But generally that's the big difference. The HCU is applied at the page at the entire site-wide level on every page, or most every page, because you could have a little lesser of a penalty if it was like, shouldn't say penalty, but devaluation, if it was like a low amount of pages that they found. But if you lost 90% of your traffic, you can assume your entire site would have been devalued. Where their CU just happens at the query level, so you're looking for root queries and subsequent pages that they're associated with. And then generally, you'll find like maybe two or three root queries maximum, and those pages have declined. Well, other pages might have gone up in the meantime. So those are
Okay.
two big differences between the two.
Again, the reason I ask is, when somebody's making initial contact with an SEO, often it's good to be able to help direct the SEO's efforts. Many SEOs are easily distracted, as we well know. Okay.
Also, something important, real quick, that came out of a conversation yesterday on Facebook, private groups. If someone says they're going to do an audit for you on a recovery and they say it would take them less than a day or less than 2 days to do it, that is not an audit. That is a site check that they're using a tool to do. There's absolutely no way that someone can do the deep dive that's necessary on a recovery audit in 24 to 48 hours. They can give you a high level review, they can look at some of the things that they think might be an issue. But to recover from a core update, you have to look at all the ranking signals and
Oh.
how your site's affected. So you cannot do that in 24 to 48 hours.
Well, and a full site audit requires a lot of
Yeah.
analysis. You got to look at tons of components of a website, see how they work together, see how your data on traffic works with, and there's so much to consider in a massive in a website audit in 24 hours. You better be paying a team of very busy beavers about 30 grand to get results in 24 to 48 hours, and even then, question them because it's not enough time to really think
You have
about
to
it.
do the crawl. You have to do the crawls. The crawls at least there would be one day of that. And so someone was like pushing a tool button and getting a report and saying they were auditing websites and it only took them half an hour to audit everyone. And we're like, that's not
That's
an
phenomenal.
audit.
That's incredible in every sense of the word.
But that's the easiest way for someone to vet somebody. Ask them how long their recovery audit takes. And if they say 24 hours or 48 hours, 72 hours, that is not a recovery audit.
Okay, speaking of the word incredible, at the time that we recorded this podcast, around 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the 26th of no of September, this story was less than 36 hours old. But it feels like it's such a big story. It feels and so encompassing. It almost feels like it's been going on for a very long time. But I swear to goodness,
Yes.
it hasn't even been a day and a half yet.
Exactly.
So yesterday morning, WordPress users woke up to the founder and grand poobah of WordPress, Matt Mellewig.
Of automatic.
Well, of automatics, for sure.
Yeah.
The Matt is the inventor of WordPress, the original inventor of WordPress, and the guy who set up the WordPress Foundation, and now runs Automattic, which is the
Profit arm of
profit arm
WordPress.
of the WordPress of WordPress. And they woke up to Matt Mullenweg. I don't think this is too biased a word. I think flipping out would be the right phrase. He was so and he's flipping out specifically on WP Engine, the claiming that WP Engine is violating copyright on WP, which instantly can't touch, on the concept of WordPress, managed hosting, managed services, etc. This is a really confusing and really, this is a traumatic story in many ways because I think so many of us are invested in the WordPress community and the concept of open source. And Christine, I'm going to start stammering because the enormity of it just keeps running through my head. Can you succinctly, what's going on here?
Basically, what he posted on several postings, plus he announced at a keynote, I think it was at a WordCamp. He was mad at WP Engine because one, his mom thought WP Engine was WordPress. I don't know anybody who thinks WP Engine is WordPress. We all know it's a host. So I don't know why that was a thing. Then you had limited undos, basically, revisions history, only three, but you can ask them to lift it from three to whatever you want it to be. But WordPress comes with unlimited revisions, although people use WP Engine like myself were saying, but we can save all the time. So then they keep a revision history while you're working on it. So it doesn't really matter whether WordPress does that or not. And then the other thing he said was that they've been using the WordPress name and they're making money off it and they don't contribute enough to the community. But you and I just got right before this show came on, the contributions to WordPress, and I haven't been able to verify this myself. I did get it from someone who works with the core, the WordPress core. And yes, Automattic does a tremendous amount of hours. They did in September, they did three, I don't know if this is for monthly or yearly, 3,968 hours. But they also are the profit arm of WordPress. So they are WordPress, right? So of course they spend that much time committing to WordPress because that's their site. But then the next most frequent contributor was Awesome Motive, and that was 204 hours. GoDaddy was 178 hours. So if we get down to WP Engine, there were 40 hours, but there's lots of people below them, probably like 75 people below them in this chart. So they're not the only one. So it seems like there's a personal sort of beef. I don't know for sure, but he says he's been telling them for years they have to pay up to use the name and they haven't paid. So now, today, if you use WP Engine, they have sent a cease and desist to WP Engine and told them they cannot use the WordPress basically API. And so your automatic updates are now not automatically updating. Now you can, if you use WP Engine your whole time and you don't know this, you can do it yourself manually. And WP Engine put out a post explaining how you do it. It's really not that hard, but you also won't be told if your plugin is out of date. So that's a security issue. So you have to go and check them manually.
So, basically, Automattic, which owns the rights to license the trademarks around WordPress, has cut off WP Engine from WordPress services. The WordPress API doesn't work with WP Engine websites.
Right. Now, WP Engine works.
WP Engine works, and your templates will still work. All of the functionality that you get with WP Engine will still work, and WP Engine is working on a gajillion and one workarounds to this as we speak, undoubtedly. But the automated features that integrated WP Engine with the rest of the world, the WordPress universe, have been cut off. You're no longer going to get instant updates. You're no longer going to be told when there's a new version of WordPress, and it will no longer instantly update onto your account as you may have had set through WP Engine. You can do all of this manually, as WordPress users have been able to do since day one. But so many managed WordPress hosting accounts did all of this for you, which is the darn charm of WordPress. Everything gets done for you in so many ways. It seems to be coming down to a thing about money.
It does. He's claiming purity, WordPress purity. But of course, here's an actual post for him yesterday. The commercial trademark has always belonged to Automattic since the trademark started. You can look it up publicly. Only Automattic can sublicense it. Also, he's saying WP Engine violates WooCommerce trademark. Doesn't matter. He's not responsible for that. But if you look at the response in the WordPress community, these are the people that, because WordPress runs like 50% of the websites right now.
Yeah.
So 90% of the people are not going to know about WordPress core or any of this stuff, right? But the ones that are devoted to WordPress, they're not happy with Mark from Automattic. They're not mad at WP Engine. Like 10% of the comments are negative to WP Engine, because WP Engine also contributes in different ways. They contribute like by doing WordCamps, and they contribute by doing sponsorships and things like that. So they're not contributing. They're just not contributing to the core. But as we saw from the hours, nobody else is either. Automattic is massively ahead of everyone else, right?
This is what they're saying.
Yeah, this is just what they're saying. So it really looks like it is money, because he doesn't want a little money from WP Engine. I don't know the exact numbers. I've seen a bunch of numbers thrown around. I don't know which ones are correct, but we are talking about millions of dollars.
I was going to say, as it turns out, WP Engine isn't just making a little bit of money off of facilitating WordPress. They're making a heck of a lot of money facilitating WordPress.
They are,
Well, it sounds like the WordPress Foundation is saying, hey, we want our cut.
Well, no,
Matt is on behalf of the WordPress Foundation.
WordPress isn't necessarily thrilled either.
Now, here's the thing that's really twisting a bunch of people's heads. WordPress is open source.
Yes.
WP Engine hasn't violated any written rules that anybody has been able to point out in print, or to Christine, who has been hitting everybody she knows up on X and on social media to try to get a coherent explanation. No one's been able to tell her what rules WP Engine has actually broken in providing the services they do. You are absolutely allowed to modify and distribute your modified version of WordPress.
Yes. Also, real quick, just to jump in. Matt has told people that something called some of the main services don't work, but they're not true. Anybody who uses WP Engine and works on core, so that's absolutely not true. You can use them. It's just WP Engine has their own way of doing it, but you can turn that off and actually turn on the WordPress core. So they have not removed the ability to do what Matt is saying. They've removed the ability to do. They just have a way of doing it they think is better. And you can say, hey, turn that off, and they'll turn that off.
So, yeah. So what really seems to be hurting many people's brains the most isn't the business dispute. That's a business dispute. We're not supposed to understand this because we're not sitting in those boardrooms and are privy to all of this. No, there's a
Yeah.
whole bunch of facts and information we simply don't have, and we know that. What's hurting people's brains is this is the open source movement. And the open source movement is suddenly clamping down. Earlier today, Automattic filed trademark protection for managed WordPress and managed WordPress hosting.
Yeah. Good luck with
So
this.
does that threaten? I'm at a company called Bluehost. They're not the cheapest hosting company in the world, but their service is phenomenal. I'm really happy with them. And they give me managed WordPress hosting. Are they in trouble? Are they breaking the new sudden not so open source WordPress laws? I don't think they are because they're providing me a service that I'm paying for happily.
Yeah, that's the thing. Also, they're common words, so you might be able to trademark, enforce the trademarks on WordPress, but they even want to do managed hosting. Managed hosting applies to a whole lot of things outside of WordPress, so
Yeah.
good luck with that one. But here's a statement from WP Engine on Twitter, as of 3:11 a.m. today. Matt Mullenweg, CEO of Automattic, has misused his control of WordPress to interfere with WP Engine's customers' access to WordPress.org, asserting that he did so because WP Engine filed litigation against WordPress.org. This is simply not true. Our cease and desist letter was a letter, not a lawsuit, and was directed Automattic for Matt's pattern of serious and repeated misconduct, behavior that must stop for the health and stability of the entire community. Matt Mullenweg's unprecedented and unwarranted action interferes with the normal operations of the entire WordPress ecosystem, impacting just not WP Engine and our customers, but all WordPress plugin developers and open source users who depend on WP Engine tools like ASCF, that's something that people have talked a lot about. We are taking immediate steps to remediate the impact of this action. We remain steadfastly committed to supporting WP Engine customers, users, and the entire WordPress community. And though there are some people that support Matt, most of the comments from people, even people that are pretty, like their bios says, like claim to be part of the core developers, are pretty angry that, as you said, he's breaking open source. So
Yeah,
the open source. Yeah, there's no legal obligation. I can't speak to contribute, and if you want to, you can. And yes, of course, WP Engine makes a lot of money, but WP Engine is also a host, and they're not breaking, as you like you said, any rules of it. I mean, sure, maybe they should contribute more. I don't know because I don't know how much money they contribute to the other causes of WordPress that they do contribute to. But this being said, there's a lot of outrage against Matt and saying that he should be fired, that he should be removed because he's breaking what open source means, and no one person should be able to do this to the entire open source community of WordPress.
I mean, yeah, the very first thing I thought after I kind of, and I'm not even sure I still have a handle on exactly what's going on, but after I kind of got a handle on what's going on, my very first thought was, who's next? What if somebody in power, maybe Matt, maybe somebody else in the WordPress Foundation or at Automattic, or it could be some other. I mean, there are so many open source agreements that run the internet that we as an industry depend on. So, you know what? The internet used to be likened to a bunch of handshakes and bubble gum and baling wire.
Also, apparently the workaround that WP Engine gave overnight is now blocked as well. This was reported by Jacob Martella from on Twitter. He said you can't add plugins directly from the .org repo if you have a WP Engine site. That's a big deal. That means you can't go to the WordPress repository and get the plugins, even though the plugins may not have been created by WordPress.
So actually, and that actually renders the functionality of WordPress useless to many WordPress users now.
Well, no, I mean the one you have will work, but you can't add
Indeed,
new
but you
ones,
can't add
and
new ones.
you can't update what you have.
That's phenomenal. That's basically, again, that destroys the functionality of WordPress itself.
Can I actually say
That's
that's probably also
phenomenal.
a national security issue?
I'm sure you can.
Because yeah, 50% of the 50% of the internet is based on WordPress, and I don't know how much of WP Engine has, but they have a large share of the hosting.
Yep.
So now we have WordPress sites which are notoriously for being hacked. notorious. That's why I use WP Engine, because my sites don't get hacked there. Not saying they can never, but they do a really good job of protecting you. And now what? They just won't be able to update the sites. All these people don't have devs who don't know what this is about, who mom and pop because they use WordPress because it's the easiest thing for them to use. Now they won't be able to update their plugins, know that they're out of date and can't upload them from the .org. They have to go find them and download them and upload themselves through like an FTP. That's insane.
You know who's having a really good day?
Is that?
Wix.
Yes,
Wix.
They
The
are.
Folks at Wix are having a wonderful day today.
Who is a sponsor, by the way? We forgot our sponsor today.
Yeah, full disclosure,
Wix.
We don't just mean to be funny. We know they're having a good day because heck.
Yeah. And WordPress could lose a lot of its share this way too.
Yeah, this is it's stunning. What you just reported, Christine, I'm still speechless that they've shut off access to plugins. You can't even manually update plugins now. That
yeah, and he
wow.
posted screenshots, so this is confirmed. It's not just someone saying it.
That's scorched
it's the
earth.
Developer for the core too. So
that's scorched earth. That's
yeah.
And you know what I was. Yeah, that's it's really hard to know what to say after that. That's extraordinary step. Okay, we should probably move on.
Yeah, and there'll be more to report, I'm sure, next week.
Yeah,
But
this story is absolutely not going away quickly.
No. But keep yourself plugged into WP Engine is putting the updates in your dashboard, so you'll be able to see when you log in. I have WP Engine account, so I saw them when I logged in today.
Okay, this isn't on our grid. I apologize for throwing this at you, Christine, but I think it really does set up a number of other stories that we're going to be moving forward with. You know what's going to be happening in the very near future? If you live in Upper New York State, this might concern you a little bit, or if you're a person of a certain age. What does the words Three Mile Island mean to you?
Oh, yes, I know. If you are a younger person, you probably don't know, but we sat there and watched for days thinking it was going to melt down and poison all of us with radiation, because I lived close to it on the East Coast.
Three Mile Island is a nuclear reactor in New York State, and when we were young in the early 80s, it came very close to melting down. It didn't. Spoiler alert, we survived without nuclear disaster, but the plant was shut down thereafter, and that was the beginning of a fairly strong social concern around nuclear energy in the United States. Probably the very beginning of the anti-nuclear energy movement, serious anti-energy nuclear movement. Well, Three Mile Island is going to be revived. They're reanimating the corpse of this nuclear power plant because Microsoft needs electricity for AI.
Yes, because AI is creating so much carbon that it's undoing all the work on decarbonization in the atmosphere. It's that high.
Yeah,
So they have to come. So go ahead. Yeah.
I was gonna say AI consumes three times the data. An AI overview response
every query
consumes
is
three
a
times the
bottle.
energy
Yeah,
of
every query takes a bottle of water.
Or so, yeah. So huge amounts
Okay.
of electricity required to propel AI forward. That said, OpenAI plans on moving from a nonprofit structure to a for-profit structure, giving ownership of Sam Altman equity. Under plans, well, these are the plans of attracted criticism, undoubtedly. The shift may give Altman as much as 7% stake in the firm. And this has led to the exit of some other C-level persons at OpenAI, including their chief research officer, Bob McGrew, and OpenAI's chief technical officer, Maria Mertzi. I'm sorry,
Yeah.
Maria Moratti.
I think it's Myra, maybe.
I'm sorry, Myra Moratti.
And her, and also the VP of research as well. So, and they've also lost several others in the last 2 weeks. So I think they've lost six or seven key players there. They didn't say it's because of it going to a for-profit status, but it is. The timing is very similar. Also, the reason it could be is because remember last year how a couple people left and said they were concerned about the lack of oversight and how fast Altman was moving and safety. If they do go to for-profit, the nonprofit, non-financially interested board that they just put in charge of the oversight for those reasons would
have
be
to be
null.
Reconstituted.
I no, mean, it won't have any power.
Well, they'd have
no
to be
power.
Constituted. Absolutely.
That
board would be null.
Yeah. So that would be the second time that Altman has managed to eliminate an oversight board that's not financially vested in OpenAI, which is to me a little bit sus. Just my personal opinion that you're twice getting rid of an oversight board in what, 2 years, by just restructuring, because that's what they did last time. So anyway, the oversight board might be no more. He may get invested interests, and most of his team at the highest levels have left. So.
Okay.
That was all too well.
So in more creative ways to spend electricity, Meta is going to be putting AI-generated images in your Facebook and Instagram feeds now. Just to keep things really fun, some of these AI-generated images might be you.
Yes.
If you've opted into Snapchat's AI feature, if you use a Meta or Instagram, you've given permission for them to train.
Yes. Meta's Imagine Yourself feature is the one that adds. Yeah. By the way, you will be able to remove it, but I'm sorry. Who asked? This is what I ask now every time I see some announcement about AI. Who wanted this? I go to Instagram for real photos and real videos, right? Do you go there to see an AI generated post in your feed? Like just because you're interested in this? I mean, why? Do I care? I do not care. I want to see people's real stuff. So this thing I said the other day to when the AI chief at IBM posted something about all these amazing things they were doing, I was like, I never see you guys say market research. I never see you guys, we ask the user. Every time I get AI forced on me, and not that there's no uses for it, there are uses for it, but anytime it's forced on me, it's for nothing I ever wanted. So maybe there'll be kids that want to see AI images of things that they never took a photograph of and nobody they know did either. Maybe, but I don't know. It just seems like a real silly waste of energy and resources. What do you think?
AI is perhaps the greatest instrument for wealth transfer from creatives to C-levels in my existence as a content creator.
Yeah, that's what I think.
This is what it's about. It's not about saving us labor. It's literally about taking wealth from content creators and putting it in the pockets of already very wealthy investors and C-level persons. And I say this as a content creator whose content is being used to train the same AI that is trying to limit the uniqueness of my own content. So there you go.
Good news is you can disable it, but if you've already been trained on it, well, good luck.
It almost doesn't matter. You disable it, your neighbor's not. That's the problem.
But you won't have to see it, at least, if you disable it. You won't have to see the AI-generated nonsense, because I'd hate to, it's already bad on Facebook. Like, I go there and I get ads and groups and people I don't know for the first 5 minutes I'm scrolling. Now I'm going to have images from AI stuck in there, too. Why?
Well, I mean, you already do. For goodness sakes, you go to Facebook. Half the advertisements are AI generated images, and they're not even particularly well done AI generated images.
Oh, I don't need more AI anywhere.
Okay. So. Speaking of the deterioration of all things, X, which Twixter, Twitter, which has deteriorated so badly, that I think it has a. I'm not sure anybody actually knows how many real users are left on Twitter. One of the newest changes that happened most recently is you can no longer block Elon Musk. Elon Musk
can't
block him. He's unblockable.
Gosh. Do you know how, by the way, do you know how it came about that he was put into everybody's feed at such a priority? I just learned it last week.
He was probably trying to make some dumb joke that didn't get propagated the way he wanted. I don't know.
He was at a football game and he made a tweet, and Biden was getting more likes than he was. So his developers felt to appease him, they would boost his account. Imagine how tiny your ego is when you're worried about your tweet at a football game getting less than the president of the United States.
Well, actually, I don't think in this case it was about Musk's ego as much as it was about the reach against somebody he clearly considers to be a political opponent. Musk doesn't care about the veracity of information. Musk cares about out yelling
Yes.
people he doesn't like.
So you will not.
And
So when it comes to blocking, first he's talking about removing the block again in December. If he removes the block, I've been there for actual reasons, not because I don't understand the problems with X Twitter. But if they remove the block feature, I'm out. I'm gone because I get harassed every day by bots and fake accounts, and I'm not going to sit there and have that happen all day long. I had one time before I could really block the way we can now. Where I spent 12 hours fending off fake account attacks. There's just no way. There's no way I'll use the platform.
Christian, the
At
truth
that
is, I
point.
honestly don't know why anybody would be on Twitter or on
Well,
X
I
now.
have.
It's a platform for hate speech. That's
There
pretty
is,
much it.
yes. Well, it's not the only weird thing that's there, but it is a problem. It's a huge problem. I'm not condoning it. It's just because we have an election coming up. And after that, I will change.
So, according to X's data, users reported 81 million incidents of abuse, harassment, hate, and about 66 million cases of hate speech. X is bragging that it is suspending more accounts, and it is suspending more accounts. The problem is the accounts that are committing acts of abuse and harassment or outright hate speech are being suspended much less frequently than accounts that are trying to taunt them or resist them, stand up against them, or say stuff back to them.
Yeah.
X has suspended over 2 million more accounts for quote unquote child safety than it did 2 years ago. But it's ignoring many requests to ban what's outright demonstrably hateful content.
Yeah, 111,000 profiles were suspended for hateful content in conduct in 2022. This year at the same time, 2,300, a drop of almost 90%.
Incredible.
And I've reported hate and it doesn't do anything. And then also suicide and self-harm content, they went from 11,000 to 2,000. So unless these are happening much less, which I doubt. Also in legal requests, they complied with 70%, but 30% were not complied with. But I think the hate speech one is really tremendously obvious. 111,000 profiles were suspended in 2022. Versus 2,300 now, and we know between 2022 and now, they have unleashed a lot of hate accounts under the direction of Musk, specifically telling them to do that, including real Nazis and white supremacists. So there's no way that we know that hate has not gone down on Twitter; it's gone way up, but there's suspending far fewer accounts.
Well,
Yeah,
and you can't block Elon Musk.
that's crazy. I did not know you cannot block them. That's so funny. Anyways.
Okay, so let's get into a little bit of Google SEO stuff because it's easier to deal with, and I just feel so dirty after
Oh, wait.
talking with Elon Musk.
One really quick fake thing, just so you don't do it. A consultant that did fake Biden's voice just for some show people that it could fake. He wasn't trying to do something nefarious. He was just trying to show people that this happens. He got fined $6 million. So don't go faking people's voices and putting it on like any sort of communications device because it is illegal. And
for what it's worth, Steve Kramer, this guy in Louisiana, a political consultant, did unleash robocalls that did have a deep fake of the president's voice telling people not to vote in advance polls, but to vote in November instead.
Yeah.
To prove a point, Mr. Kramer did break a law and should have been charged.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. I'm not supporting
What
it
an
either.
idiot thing! What an idiot thing to
Yeah.
do!
I'm just saying it wasn't meant to be nefarious, but it's still stupid. Yes.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay, so Google,
So Google AI overviews were showing for branded queries for HubSpot. So HubSpot asked Barry if they were now showing branded queries showing AI overviews on branded queries and navigational queries, which is kind of a big deal because then you may show competitors on a branded navigational query. So I'm looking for, like most people, I don't put in, Facebook.com. I just put in Facebook, and then the first link comes up. I click on it, and I don't click on the paid ad one, but I click on the other one. So people do that often. And so if you suddenly started putting AI overviews in with other competitor brands in there, you would see a decrease in clicks to the main brand. So, but apparently, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, it strikes me that AI overviews is looking for content it can find in, say, I don't know, Knowledge Panel to construct AI overviews. So if you're going to throw a branded query in, you're probably going to get a Knowledge Panel, which means you're probably going to get Google's written version of said Knowledge Panel.
Well, the good news is Barry couldn't recreate it on anything but HubSpot. So it looks like it might just be a bug for HubSpot. We don't know why yet. He didn't get an answer, but at least right now it's not showing up on a bunch of branded navigational queries. For people who don't know, branded and navigational just means you're typing in the brand name, or navigational also means brand name and or brand name with another word or two. And so you would be losing some of your clicks to other websites if that happened. Right now, it doesn't seem to be happening, just for HubSpot.
Here's a cool story. It's a little bit hard to explain because it would help if we actually had a page that we could refer to and point to. And the context of the text on the page is important in image search. So if an image that you're using on your website is almost certainly embedded on a page that carries a whole bunch of other types of other content. It could be video content, could be text content, could be whatever. But if you want that image to rank well in Google image search, Google's got to kind of understand that this image does relate to the information it's using to contextualize the image. John Mueller used the example of a photo of a beach, a photo of a beach on a page. Google doesn't know exactly why that beach is there. Is it a beach from a hotel? Could it be the site of a chemical spill? Did a tanker run aground on that beach? Or is it just a place where the locals like to go and hang out? What's the context of that image of a beach? That'll help Google understand why it's referring people to this beach when they're looking for an image of a beach.
Right, and don't rely on the metadata for the image. They're not using that. That's something they clarified last week. They're using your alt text. Do not keyword stuff it because Google has a secret devaluation for that, because it's meant for people with disabilities. And also, as Jim just said, make sure the context of your page supports the image.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know what? In a way, I actually like that.
I do.
There's so much, so many images in Google search already. Google's saying straight up, why am I putting this? Why am I using this image? Tell me why.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, here's another thing I like that Google's done. They are really clearly defining their web search spam policies. They've rewritten a bunch of them. They've added a great deal more detail. They're much, much more descriptive. And I think this is going to give Google the ability to actually point out to people what they consider spam on a page.
Definitely, yeah, and it's too
Or in
much to get.
behavior.
Yeah, it's too much to get into here, but everyone should go read the new spam policies because there's a lot of information on the page, and there's a lot of changes.
If you go over to Search Engine Journal, or I think Search Engine Land does as well, but definitely Search Engine Journal, they have a cool side-by-side comparison, the old
Yeah.
version of the spam policy versus the new written updates. Definitely look at them side by side.
Or go to Rusty Brick on Twitter because Barry Schwartz is the one that created that. So he shows you the side by side on Twitter.
The important stuff to this again is I think the more detail that Google is able to give in Google support docs, the more likely they're going to be able to actually start pointing out, this is what we saw, this is what we didn't like, this is why we took this action. I'm hoping they go that
Yes.
direction. Maybe it
Yeah,
might
they
be.
did.
Maybe they never
Oh,
will.
no. No, they tell you a lot of that information now inside at least the spam report. So just make sure you read it. Because like all these people got hit last year. A lot of people, I asked them if they did spam, if they did ads, and if they did like affiliate stuff, did they put no sponsored on their links? And Google moved like adding rel sponsored on your links to a spam action in the last year or so. And prior to that, it was just like, do this, it's a good idea. But now they're like, no, don't do this. And we may actually give you a spam devaluation, which are the most severe ones you can get. So.
Okay. If you are running a React site and you're using your React site and you're using JavaScript to write your head tags, specifically your robots no index tag, Google's reportedly working on fixing a problem with it not being able to read that tag and that directive in some JavaScript generated pages. It's happening for React apps using single page applications, SPAs, that have the no index directive on them. Google's not picking it up. This could be a real problem for you. Yeah, that's again, the render server save your life.
Yeah, so make sure, because when you have React pages, you're creating the page, and also partly in JavaScript. And like we ran into a problem with a client where they had two canonical tags, one on the raw HTML and one on the rendered JavaScript.
They
And Google's
matched,
like,
right?
no, they
Oh,
did not.
that's
But
bad.
Google, yes. So we were like, so when I first started that gig, they're like, hey, sometimes our canonicals don't work. And I'm like, you have two different canonicals? So I asked John Mueller. And he's like, we'll just pick one. We don't know which one. So if you're doing your no index in the JavaScript, it may or may not see it or read it or decide that it's important. So you have to make sure it's in the raw. But Google is trying to fix it so that if you do accidentally do that it won't be a problem.
Never rely on Google to read the JavaScript.
No,
Now, here's the
never.
thing. Google probably will read the JavaScript. It probably can, but
Yeah.
don't bet on it. The solution, especially when you're using in a React site, is to have a HTML render server that's feeding the raw HTML that matches what would be produced by JavaScript. Remembering that many of these pages don't exist. I'm sorry, on React sites, these pages don't exist until they're called up and created, and they're done on the fly. So
Yes.
if there's a break somewhere, Google doesn't get the information.
Yeah, and by the way, super important, if you have a React site, make sure that the devs record every page created, because if you ever need to know what the pages are, they have no way to look at that. So they have no, I had a site that had an issue where their search created pages for 20 years, and a lot of them were created by spammers and hackers and things like that, because they also had a hack on the site. And I'm like, give me a list of the pages. And then the developer's like, we can't do that. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is when the React first came out. And I'm like, no, I need a list of the pages. And they're like, we don't have a list of the pages. Do you not understand this? And I'm like, I do not understand this. But as Jim just said, it's all created on the fly. So make sure the developers are recording every page so that if you have an issue, you can go back and look at what pages have been created on your site.
And Christine's defense, when headless sites came around, they were incredibly confusing, absurdly confusing. They still are, damn it. Just
Yeah,
like,
my and I yeah, and I cut my teeth on a 2.25 to 3 million page site. So yeah. So I was like, oh, really? Okay. So
hey, here's one that I'm not sure how I feel about, but I think it could be kind of cool, and it could be kind of sortie on Google's part. Google's introduced a feature in Google search when news or breaking stories come up. This feature is called Backstory, and it tends to come from definitely with political queries and possibly other news queries. I could see application of the news queries, but it is what it sounds like. Your search query or pulls up news stories. Those news stories have stories that led to it, like a backstory. Google's trying to tell you what that is. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in the wild, but I could see. I understand why it makes my stomach nervous. What do you think, Christine?
I just think, yeah, I'm very excited. It could be dangerous. I think it could be, because what is it pulling in there? Do they have a lot of control of it? I don't know. So
Indeed,
plus, if some
indeed.
of it's dated, like one of the ones they show in the screenshot is 4 weeks old. Well, things could have changed a lot because this is about election polling in 2024. And 4 weeks ago, things have changed between now and then. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a great feature or not. We'll find out when we see it more like actually live. Right now, this is like early days in testing.
There's a rumor out there that Google Product Experts program is going away. There are a number of volunteers, people who aren't actually paid by Google, but are well known in their sector, in their field, for just particularly understanding a feature or a product of Google, and then they're unofficial ambassadors, if you will. Again, rumor that it's being cut, destroyed, or going away. Apparently, rumor of its demise is greatly exaggerated. Google Ads, Android Maps, etc., will continue to have product experts helping you when you go ask for help.
Apparently, there's a group of people that were told they're no longer experts, and that started the rumor. But it's just the group of people, not a particular group, just like a number of people were told that. So,
are they
giving
inexpert advice? That happens.
You may not be giving good advice. I don't know. They didn't say why, but it did happen. So we've got a few quick stories here. I'm gonna run through these. Jump in, Jim, if you feel you want to add
please
to
do.
It. So Google Search is going to start adding into the product grid in search that a carousel, that there's a from small business carousel now. So products from small businesses will match your query will show up, and it'll say from small businesses. That's pretty cool. I think hopefully it works well. I'm gathering they're going to test this through the Christmas season, because we have like in the US, we have like Small Business Saturday. So my guess is that's what it's showing. That's why they're starting it now for the holidays. So,
I think this is okay. I'm afraid of businesses being pigeonholed here so they can't compete against the big guys.
Yeah, but the good news is they're giving special placement right under the filter bubbles.
Okay. Well, let's see how this works. I'm making a really big assumption when I say that this is my concern, and I'm sure somebody at Google has seen this concern, undoubtedly. I hope they present this well and don't make it. Because one of the cool things about search is it was an equalizer for so long, eh?
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a good idea. We'll see how small businesses, if they like it, and we'll find out. I'm sure we'll hear about it.
This next story on movie cards weirds me out.
Yeah, I'm thinking that it's just if you watched it online, I guess. But the movie card will tell you if you've recently watched a movie. Only you can see it. Nobody else can. But, you know, I know they track stuff all the time. But whenever they tell me they're tracking stuff and they put it in my face, it gives me a weird feeling. Like, you watched this movie. And it's like, I don't want you to keep that data. Like, I don't know. It's just not something you need to tell me, right? Like, I probably know which movies I've seen.
when I first saw this story in our grid, I was like, well, how the heck would Google know? But then it occurs to me, I take Google to every movie I go see. It's in my hip pocket.
Yeah, I think we're not really sure. Barry was not sure if it's coming from your viewing history somewhere or if it's just when you watched it online. So, but it's just weird. And then
is this what I watched online at Netflix or at YouTube?
He doesn't know. It didn't
Tough.
Say.
Yeah, weird, eh?
It doesn't say. It just says watched online. I guess if you're logged in on your Google account, though, and you're watching stuff online on your TV, which is online, right? You're streaming, that they could do that too. So I would check mine personally. This just came up right before we went to air, and it's possible that it's either. So we'll find out. I'll check mine. We'll see. So also the next thing would be Google is putting states in the news. So this is an interesting play on local news. So they're going to have a new, like it looks new, kind of the same, but it's just going to have different states that are trending in the news. So like presidential campaign is the search in the image shown, and it's like Arizona, Pennsylvania, Nebraska, North Carolina. And then you can go through like, an arrow, and it'll keep loading states for you. And then you can see the news for local states. Local news. I think that's probably good. Local news gets buried a lot. Doesn't usually have a lot of visibility except on things like Facebook and social. So I think that's probably good. We'll see. Because there are local news providers, aggregates, that I don't know if they get hurt by this, but I think it might be good. What do you think?
Well, I don't know enough about how Google's going to present this to understand.
Yeah.
I know that we're going that the next 12 weeks are going to be incredibly politically charged. Actually, it's only 6 weeks, isn't it? It's only six. Is it just about six? Maybe 7 weeks to the U.S. election,
No, that's a lot.
and everything is going to be about specific states in the in the uh, in the in the, in the, in the coming news cycles, and I'm worried about this being used politically. But if this is a way to help filter people into better understandings of local news and the way it affects them and their municipalities or their communities, it's probably a good thing. Let's just hope that there's a plurality of news coverage out there still.
Local, a lot of local sites and publications have taken a real hit. So, Google is going to also add to search product detail grid. Now, Barry couldn't reproduce this, but basically, it just tells you what was most popular and what had the best prices inside the actual product result. But I think that's good. You know,
That's
what
probably a
people
good thing.
like. Yeah, that's probably a good thing. And then Google adds with 10 site links. If you got this, it was a bug. So if you looked at Google, if you looked at a site, you know, I mean, if you did a search and ads came up, there were literally 10 site links running all the way across the page on there. And everyone was posting the screenshots of like, why are there 10 site links under here on my ad? That is just a bug. And if you still have it, it should be gone. But if it's not gone, it'll be gone soon. So.
Can we jump back one story? Google search product detail.
I just said that.
Most popular, best price. No, you know what? I just wanna add an addendum. Structured data, friends.
Yes,
You
structured
wanna
data.
be the most popular or best price. I mean, seriously, if Google's gonna be labeling a collection of goods and one of them is gonna be most popular and the other is gonna be best price, you wanna be sure you're one of those two.
Exactly.
Structured data.
Structured data is so important. More and more important, the more machine learning they use, the more you want structured data because it tells Google and the crawler that this is this. This is my recipe. These are my ingredients. This is the time. This is how long it takes to cook. They don't have to guess. They don't have to interpret, which means you have a better chance of showing up. It's not a ranking signal, but it is a hey, this we're clearly telling you what we're doing, clearly telling you who we are, and Google doesn't have to try to interpret any of that, which makes it more likely for you to show up.
Yeah, you know what the ultimate ranking signal is? The ultimate, it's not really a signal. It's more of a understanding. It's like Google's bloody lazy. That's the ultimate signal.
Also,
Make it
and they have to
easy.
spend so much money. So the easier you make it, the better they like you because they don't have to spend all their resources and money on that and build nuclear power plants. See, we
Okay,
went full circle.
important public relation, important PSA, Hurricane Helene is real and dangerous. Avoid
Very
it.
dangerous. Yes.
Although by the time you hear this, it's probably already
Yeah,
passed.
he probably
We
passed.
hope you're okay. We hope that you're
Yeah.
that nothing bad happened to you or your family. Want to say thanks in the biggest way to Audience Key and to the folks over at Wix Studio who are still probably on the floor laughing their asses off.
There's some funny memes today. Some very funny memes. Just search for them.
Okay, so special thanks to Audience Key, our sponsor, and again to the folks over at Wix Studio. Again, happy birthday, Danny Sullivan, 59 years old today, grandfather of the SEO industry, and now search liaison over at Google. Christine, I think that's pretty much it. We've gone about full clock, eh?
We made it. It's great. I didn't know we'd make it today, but we did good.
We
So.
absolutely did.
Yes.
One last public service announcement. Last week's show got completely badly messed up because I had COVID. Don't get COVID. It sucked. It was awful. It was my first bout with it. But it is, if anyone tells you it ain't real, it is. And it's awful.
It's
Don't get
awful.
it.
Yes. Yes. And you might get our show from last week and this week at the same time because we had to record later. So,
Yeah, and again,
yeah.
that's all I. You know, sir, I feel like I got to apologize for
No, you don't have
catching
to
the
apologize. I've
bubonic
had COVID.
plague.
No, I've had it twice. You've had it twice. Anyone's had it knows you do not need to apologize. The fatigue alone is so bad functioning is very difficult. So,
Yeah, it
we're just glad you're feeling better.
yeah, like I said, it was my first time catching it, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was scared of it to begin with. Now I'm terrified of it and have a really healthy respect for it. Okay, on behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcasts on the 26th of September, 2024. This month is over, booked, done. Next month is my 56th birthday. The next time we
Happy
record the
birthday.
next time we record this show, we're going to be recording it real close to my birthday. So yay! In the next week, friends, rank well, be kind to each other. Be real chill, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.